Corey Morningstar. Corey is an independent investigative journalist based in Canada and is also a longtime environmental activist. Her work has focused on major issues such as the global ecological collapse, the nonprofit industrial complex, imperial wars, and the role NGOs play in promoting or sustaining those wars, and the main topic of today's episode, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Welcome, Corey. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, Whitney. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being on your podcast.
So to begin, the Fourth Industrial Revolution is described by the World Economic Forum, or WEF, as a, quote, new chapter in human development enabled by technological advances that are, quote, merging the physical, digital, and biological worlds. It is currently being marketed as a way to ensure that the future is more sustainable and collaborative, or so they say, and those, of course, are just two examples of their many buzzwords. However, beneath the sleek marketing, there is a much more sinister side to what Schwab and others are selling. So, Corey, how would you, based on your own research, summarize what the Fourth Industrial Revolution really is, and what is the world that it actually seeks to create?
Well, basically what it is the fusion of man with machine. And so it's basically blurring the boundaries between physical and digital. And so what that is, it's advances of things that you've written about over the past year or two, Alison McDowell, different people, artificial intelligence, robotics, Internet of Things, which is everything connected to the internet that runs on the foundation of 5G, which you're not hearing anything about because it's been framed and passed aside into like a conspiracy theory corner, so no one looks there. 3D printing, genetic engineering, gene editing, quantum computing, autonomous weapons, automation. There's some technologies right there. When I started writing, touching upon this when I was writing the first volume of the Greta series in 2019, and I think in one segment, part Act 5, maybe Act 4 or 5, I touched upon it, and then I actually wrote in the series that I would come back to that and sort of expand upon it. But at that time, Whitney, I honestly thought that was down the road. You know, I thought that was something that would take a lot of effort to get people on board, for one thing. I didn't think there'd be public uptake. And I mean, it was just so depraved and sort of, you know, representative of the sort of depraved ideologies embodied within the minds of these capitalist psychopaths. And I didn't really see these things taking off anytime soon. I didn't think the people, you know, the global populace at large would accept them. So I thought I had lots of time to write about I wrote about it in the context, the Green New Deal, the global Green New Deals will be basically a Trojan horse for the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which I do believe is the case. That's been changed now to the Great Reset, sort of a rebrand. I'm sort of rambling all over the place here, but yeah, I think that's a good introduction. And again, at the beginning, so when I realized, okay, so this is happening, you know, now we're going back to March, when I realized it was starting to already really, really roll out, I had to quickly start learning what it was. And I started following the work of Alison McDowell, and she was really, really frustrated that no one was comprehending what she was writing about. And I said, Alison, people don't know this stuff like you do. I mean, she's been writing about it for some time, but I mean, blockchain, what's blockchain? I had to like literally stop what I was doing and go learn about blockchain. So with Forrest Palmer, who works with me, our Wrong Kind of Green Collective, we did create a primer that you can find on YouTube for people. So if you're new to this and you're not sure, you know, you're not really sure what blockchain is and artificial intelligence, machine learning, I recommend that you go to that primer. The text is developed by, I believe his name is Larry, I can't think of his last name. Anyway, it's excellent. His name is on there. We credit him right at the beginning, and it's a really great learning tool. I'll just stop there for a minute.
Sure. Well, I think that was a really good introduction because, you know, the fourth industrial revolution is something that they want to implement really in every sector of society. So, you know, there are a lot of, it is a very multi-faceted push, I guess you could say, with that seeks to really, well, as they say, revolutionize every aspect of our lives, right? So there are a lot of different tentacles it has. So as you sort of mentioned earlier in March that you were seeing this start to roll out, as both you and I and several others have noted over the course of this year, the COVID-19 crisis has conveniently allowed for a lot of these disruptive technologies that are at the heart of the fourth industrial revolution have allowed them to be foisted upon the public under the guise of COVID-19 response, which is sort of has really allowed them to jump years ahead in rolling out this agenda than they otherwise would have been able to. So in your opinion, what particular agendas related to the fourth industrial revolution do you think have benefited most from what has transpired under the guise of COVID-19 response?
Yeah, I mean, so last year, the World Economic Forum last June actually partnered officially with the United Nations, and they were put at the helm of the Sustainable Development Goals. People have to understand and recognize the Sustainable Development Goals. They're called, people refer to them as SDGs, or the Global Goals. There's 17 of them. And so what they are, those are emerging markets. So they're basically under the guise of, you know, eradicating poverty, health, you know, these things that sound really wonderful and great. It's actually all about emerging markets. So we had last year and leading up to last year, we had a global economy basically on teetering towards collapse. You had Larry Summers, you had everybody saying, you know, we're really, really close to global collapse here. And then you had last year, all of a sudden, last fall, you started seeing trillions injected into the economy. And I was wondering, and for years and years, I've written about the coming financialization of nature, where they actually will assign a monetary value on every living thing that provides, quotation marks here, ecosystem services. So every single thing free in nature will be monetized and given. Basically, we've got payments for ecosystem services. You've got nature being bought, sold, traded on Wall Street. Those with money, the very people and corporations and institutions that have destroyed and plundered the entire planet are now going to own what's left. And that's also referred to as the biosphere economy. So you've got John Volans, who was one of the Extinction Rebellion business initials, signatories to that. And he called, you know, he's actually said, who will be the Bill Gates of ecosystem services, right?
So another
emerging market. So what you saw a globe, you know, going towards collapse. I've been asking, how will they do another bailout? Like, how will they do another bailout? There's no way people will accept it again after 2008. There's no way people are going to watch their, you know, their houses lost, their pensions gone, chaos. And I kept wondering how, and it kept getting closer and closer and closer, and the global debt was over $250 trillion. And then at the same time, they started campaigning on it's called New Deal for Nature, also Voice for the Planet. It's like a twin campaign out of World Economic Forum and World Wildlife Fund. And that's it, right? That's the legislation through United Nations to implement the Natural Capital Protocols. And so all this was edging closer and closer, and I kept thinking, how are they going to get this into place, right? And then they're selling a lot of it with the language pushed by the, you know, the faux left, the liberal left, under the Green New Deal. And so I'm watching this happen, and then all of a sudden we saw the pandemic, right? And we know about that scenario through scenario planning, which is done by corporations and institutions all over the world, as you know, Whitney. And so, yeah, basically that happened in March. The day the pandemic was announced, that same day, the World Economic Forum partnered with the World Health Organization. They announced a partnership with the World Health Organization and over 200 of the largest corporations on Earth to form the COVID Business Task Force. So it's just like this tidal wave of stuff happening. And then you had that pandemic, which Klaus Schwab calls a watershed moment. And so, I mean, this is their words, not mine. Watershed moment. COVID-19 is catalyst. I mean, last year I kept writing, they're resetting the economy. They're resetting the economy. They're rebooting the economy. They want to reboot the economy, right? They need $100 trillion. They're eyeing the pension funds. They need more money. When you monetize nature and replace GDP with natural capital, GDP's basically that's around $90 trillion a year. And then the value, quote unquote, monetary value of nature, it comes in around $140 trillion a year. So right away, all of a sudden, you create $50 trillion out of thin air. So it's all about markets, it's all about money, it's all about expansion and protection of existing power structures. And then everything you see is window dressing, right? It's all like trying to maintain and maintain existing social license to operate and achieve social license to operate for the Great Reset, which is, again, dressed in words like imagination and build back better.
Right. The marketing angle of this is really amazing to me, because if you look at the people that compose the World Economic Forum, including the background of Klaus Schwab itself, you know, you find some of the most notorious criminal corporations and financial enterprises. You know, you have people like Paul Singer, a U.S. billionaire who's often referred to as one of the most notorious, quote unquote, vulture capitalists. For example, you know, he's part of this, but, you know, they've been able to market it and really using mainly buzzwords or phrases or things like that that seem designed to appeal mainly to people on the left and those that are critics of capitalism. So it's really been amazing how they've been able to hoodwink people. And I think it's very telling that they've been so focused on trying to get the consent of people on the quote unquote left, particularly progressives.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, okay, so one of the key players involved in this, Christiana Figueres, who was the UN secretary, she brought in the Paris Agreement in 2015. Her family goes way back, Costa Rica. Her family's held the position of president there, her brother, her dad, her father. Anyway, she's really quite instrumental in a lot of this, including bringing Greta Thunberg to the first Davos in 2019. Why was I even telling you about her? So what did you just say that was leading me to that?
Well, I was talking about how, no worries. So how the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and people like that have been able to sort of cloak the fourth industrial revolution in these words and these phrases that appeal to the appeal mainly to the progressive left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this woman, Christiana Figueres, so she's works with We Mean Business. She has started, which actually is the key person group behind the Greta Thunberg campaign, which started back in 2018. That was sort of what kicked everything off that. And so she wrote a book, it's called The Future We Choose. It's actually all about the future they choose. So it's just like another sort of storytelling effort to bring people on board. And if you look at that, I mean, it's just incredible. There's even Naomi Klein and Klaus Schwab are the two key endorsers for that book. So there you have Naomi Klein and Klaus Schwab.
Together.
With Richard Branson, right? We Mean Business, World Resources Institute, which works arm in arm with the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, it's really, really powerful, the nonprofit industrial complex and academia and science, right? It's all funded by the same foundations, the same corporations. And I mean, they've actually bought it all, they own it all, they control it all. Right, so independent journalism really under attack and getting more and more difficult for, I mean, more and more important and more important to protect.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting then that a lot of the people that have been the biggest attack dogs are really funding those attacks on independent media have been a lot of the same billionaires, particularly Silicon Valley billionaires that stand to benefit most from the fourth industrial revolution and things like that being implemented, you know, to the greatest extent possible. And so we have, you know, a lot of people like Pierre Omidyar, who not only funds Naomi Klein, right, at The Intercept, but also a lot of these quote-unquote fact-checking organizations and things like that, and these pushes to essentially regulate independent media or social media censorship and things like that. I think it's no coincidence we have that going on. And also the World Economic Forum, through the Great Reset specifically, has partnered with several mainstream media organizations, including one in the U.S. called The Conversation, where they, you know, the World Economic Forum will publish an article, one of their articles, and The Conversation will run it at the same time. And, you know, it looks like it's coming from the journalists at The Conversation, and then you have to get to the bottom to find out that it was sponsored by the World Economic Forum and things like that, right? So, you know, I mean, definitely there is a huge effort to censor dissenting voices in media and promote the ones that are, you know, willingly promoting this agenda for whatever reason. So definitely a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like even Imperial College works, right? They're in partnership with the World Economic Forum and the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And even if you go back to, again, last January, when a lot of this stuff really started pushing forward, like sort of, you know, launching into the public sphere. They talk about, you know, they had big meetings there about a vaccine revolution, how to create a vaccine revolution, because more and more people, including frontline workers, doctors, nurses, are not trusting vaccines. So they even, you know, I found even big, great big things on the wall showing how many people still trust in vaccines versus how many people don't trust in vaccines, right? So this was a really huge problem. And so, yeah, there's lots of documentation about a vaccine revolution and how to create one. That was last November. And now what do we see? Now we see, oh, what a surprise, great big vaccine, you know, like, again, sustainable development goal, I believe it's number 3, is health. If you look at that right now, that's where all the money is being injected into number 3 because of the vaccine market, right? So yeah, mm-hmm. This stuff's all tied in together, all interwoven. All these, you know, big supposedly green NGOs, Greenpeace helped create We Mean Business, right? They helped create that organization, which represents, I think it's 24 million in market cap, or sorry, 24 trillion. So they're all woven in together, right? Avaaz, Purpose, Greenpeace, 350.org, like all the big ones. World Wildlife Fund, again, one that we're guilty of, complicit in murder, rape, torture of indigenous peoples. It's all being done under the guise of protection and saving the planet. Like it's actually horrific.
Well, it's definitely horrific, that's for sure. But on a related point, one thing I have always found really interesting about the push for the fourth industrial revolution coming from people like Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum is that they describe it not as a prediction of what the future may look like, but as a call to action. And they essentially say that this is something we have to create and we have to implement. And I think that's really telling, not just because of the marketing ploy, but because they feel, in my opinion, that this is really the only way they can continue to sustain the existing power structures, right? Which is, I think, what they really mean when they use the words sustainable in relation to the fourth industrial revolution and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if you go back again to Davos that last December when they're really launching this stuff into the public sphere, and you hear, you know, Greta Thunberg for the World Economic Forum, we want you to panic. The house is burning. And then you go back and we find that sort of campaign being created by the climate mobilization. Again, all this stuff is interwoven, intermixed, same people, same organizations, all funded by millions and billions of dollars. And so it's their house on fire, right? Like, yeah, the ecological issues, everything is real. I mean, you know, we're destroying the ecosystems we depend on for all life. That's real, but they don't care about that. Okay, so they're
responsible for a lot of that, right?
So that's so frustrating now to see people supporting this and promoting it. It's like, okay, these are the people and institutions that have just destroyed the whole fucking planet. They're not going to be the ones to save it, right? We have to tear down these institutions and these power structures. You cannot save the planet in the same system that destroyed it. And so that part is really, really frustrating, but they're so great at storytelling and they have so many resources and they just basically employ their armies of NGO and academia and science. And it's just like a complete, hijacking of the collective psyche, right? Like it's storytelling, it's social engineering, it's conditioning. That's such a huge aspect of all of this. Like even with the COVID-19, the pandemic, everyone thinking all of a sudden these people care about our health. We all have Teflon in our bodies because our governments have allowed that to happen, right? The corporations mm-hmm. that run governments have done that to us. Our air is polluted, our water is polluted, our environment is poisoned. These people don't give a shit about your health, right? They never have and never will. It's not about that. This is about alienating people, making people terrified to accept their said solutions, you know, all under the guise of protecting biodiversity, protecting the planet, protecting climate. Oh, we have to do this. It's the only way. No, but like you said, Whitney, it's the only way for them to protect their ruling class status, right? They're terrified of becoming like us.
Well, you know, with the whole COVID-19 thing, you know, before they were selling it as the only way to get out of the climate crisis, but now with COVID-19, they can sell a lot of the technologies that sort of underpin the fourth industrial revolution as necessary because of the fear over disease and the fear over the coronavirus and all of this stuff, saying, you know, making people feel like their bodies are inherently flawed or dangerous, that human workers in certain jobs and professions present a danger to people, whereas that wasn't, you know, a common way of thinking before. And so we've seen this push, for example, to sell things that have long underpinned this fourth industrial revolution push, like automation, robots, artificial intelligence. We're being told that this is, you know, now necessary in order to reduce risk in terms of public health and other things. So I think COVID-19 has added like a new level of marketing potential for them. And this is interesting too, because specifically automation, robots, artificial intelligence, this obviously leaves little room for many jobs in manufacturing and other sectors that have traditionally been performed by people. So in any other quote-unquote normal world, right, those efforts would generate a lot of pushback from the public. And so, you know, their efforts to sell this under, oh, we have to save the planet and all this stuff before COVID-19 didn't really take hold really in the collective psyche, I guess you could say, as much as they had hoped before COVID-19. And now with COVID-19, they have a whole new layer that's based around concern about public health, among other things. And I think a key part of this, too, you know, that they're trying to market alongside those technologies are things like smart cities. I personally have seen several media reports over the course of the year saying that even though smart cities would be denser, more densely populated, they're actually better for fighting and preventing future pandemics and all of this stuff. So it's very interesting to see that. And at the same time, we also see smart cities over the past several years being sold along the same lines, like you were pointing out, as more sustainable and inclusive, seemingly designed to appeal to people on the left and those who are critics of capitalism. But as you've pointed out in your work, smart cities are likely to merely lead us into the next phase of capitalism, just one that's more technocratic and arguably, because of that high tech, more pervasive than its predecessors. So if you wouldn't mind expanding a little bit on smart cities in general, why they're crucial to the fourth industrial revolution in the context of automation and all this stuff, and how they are not actually going to solve the problems we're being told they'll solve, in that instead, you know, they're really a blueprint for neo-feudalism.
Okay, so basically smart cities, I mean, for one thing, I just want to mention this because I thought it was really interesting. I was looking a few months ago at an article on smart cities about transit, and they're actually designing smart city buses already where everyone's seated apart from one another. So the future, there's a really great article on Wrong Kind of Green, as well as a blog called Winter Oak, and it's called Klaus Schwab and His Great Fascist Reset. And the author, he's read through all three or four of Klaus Schwab's books, and he's taken out there. The whole article is almost direct quotes from Klaus Schwab, but it gives you a really fascinating insight into what he sees as our future, right? For instance, people, simple joys in life, such as smelling, picking up a cantaloupe and smelling it and taking in the scent and, you know, the textures, the just that experience in itself, things like that, people won't even touch one. So a lot of what you're saying about this phobia of pandemic germs, that's really gonna help instill what they see coming. So basically smart cities. So here's the thing, it's all going forward under the pretext, oh, this is going to basically save our planet, sustainable planet, right? Before Green New Deal, and then it was UN came out at the same time with Global Green Deal, so it was going to be global. They call this new global governance, right? New global architecture. It's presented and sold on the pretext it will be clean, right? But when you start going and listening to Deloitte and Touche, every McKinsey, videos, white papers on the fourth industrial revolution, you'll see nothing about nature. You'll see nothing about trees, nothing. It's all about tech and control and people working within this highly controlled digital economy, which they themselves say. I mean, there's one video that actually says who will survive and who will perish. They foresee it as a lot of people are going to suffer. Yeah, a lot of people will suffer tremendously. A lot of people will end up killing themselves. The global south. A lot of the global south will starve. That's all informal economies. They don't give a fuck. They're crushing them, right? So we're moving from bricks and mortar to digital. And if you're not going there, goodbye, you're done. So again, smart cities are, everything has to run on 5G, okay? So that's really, really important to know. So without the 5G infrastructure, there's no fourth industrial revolution, there's no great reset. In 2030, that will turn into 6G. So this is really, really powerful. 5G is up to 100 times more powerful than 4G. It's the foundation for future autonomous weapons. It's really, really tied in with artificial intelligence and wars, which you already know about and write about. They're looking at around $100 trillion to do all this. They're eyeing the pension funds. And so the thing about this, Okay, so it's basically presented as clean. So my third segment of the piece I just did now, I think is going to shock a lot of people, because up until now, people have looked at aviation as one of the major greenhouse gas emission sources, right, on the planet. Like, people have looked at aviation as being really bad for climate and that. Well, what is coming is going to dwarf that. like that's going to look like child's play, because what is coming is we had about 500,000 data centers in 2000, and I think it's 2010 to 2012. Well, now we're up to over 8 million, okay? So the data centers, like when you hear of things, everyone thinks, oh, the cloud, right? The cloud, it sounds so pure. It sounds like, and a lot of this, it goes back again, framing, language, storytelling. So people think of technology as clean, right? Internet of Things, clean. Oh, all this stuff's magically happening. No power, no pollution, no nothing, but that's the furthest thing from the truth. So all the data has to go into data centers. So now they're building hyperscale data centers. And just this year and next year alone, I mean, how quickly they're building them to keep up with this data. And the whole world is gonna move digital. So imagine, I mean, you're looking at 15-fold by 2030, which might even be, you know, really, really underestimating it, because this thing is going forward so far. Like telehealth this year went from 3% to 80% in a couple months, right? So it's all moving online. All that takes massive amounts of energy. And so they cover that, they say, well, we're using all green energy and all renewables and solar, you know, solar and wind. Okay, so what they don't say, again, go to the white papers, what they're actually doing, yes, solar, yes, wind, neither of those are clean or green, but even if they were, all the new energy being created is being sucked in, absorbed into the data centers. So we're not offsetting anything we're doing now with new energy. Like, we're not creating new energy to get rid of coal plants or anything else. We're just creating, it's the Jevons, I think it's Jevons paradox. We're creating new energy, and where it's being used, consumed. And it's carbon capture storage, right? Where you you burn and you pump it underground, right? And that leads into, what's it called? An enhanced oil recovery. That carbon not only is pumped into the ground, it helps rejuvenate dead oil wells. So now you've got more oil that you can burn, right? And then so, oh, we'll buy carbon offsets, more nuclear energy. Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, Bezos, they're all co-founders of Breakthrough Energies, Breakthrough Energy Ventures. That's nuclear, carbon capture storage. I mean, it's sold under the veneer of clean and green and beautiful and trees and environment, climate, Greta Thunberg. That in actuality, smart cities are being built on the backs of, we actually don't have enough metals and rare earth minerals, metals on this planet to build everything in this depraved architecture. And so they've already now started mining the oceans. I mean, that's happening, just starting now. Mm-hmm. That's another new industry. So think about that. This is all supposed to be to protect biodiversity. Now we're going to mine the oceans. There is so much dependent on the earth, that's the life on earth is so interwoven with the life in the ocean. Like even the plankton, it's so incredibly dangerous to be mining oceans, and so incredibly stupid and short-sighted. But that's what they're doing, right? Because it's not about the planet. It's not about people's health. It's not about protecting biodiversity. It's about money. It's about power. It's about protecting the very system that's destroying the planet.
Well, I think there is an element of nature to what they're, to what motivates them, but I think it's very different than how people like you and I would look at it. I think these people, their ideology is rooted in an ideology that's been around for a really long time, really, about the need of man, of mankind to dominate nature, viewing nature as something not to be lived in harmony with, but as something to be controlled and dominated. And if you look back at like the colonial period, you know, the Europeans in the Americas, you know, they described nature as it was there, the forest and also the indigenous people as savage, something to be civilized and things like that. And so I think this is really the extreme, you know, that taken to its extreme logical conclusion is a lot of what we're seeing now. So like smart cities, for example, even though they're marketed under this, you know, veneer of, oh, we're helping to save nature by living in them, it would just separate the people that live in those cities from nature to a huge degree, but they're being marketed or being made to appeal subconsciously to people's desire to be in nature, or to help nature, or to save nature, and all of this stuff is, I think it's all playing into part of that, but the end goal, I think, is steeped in the same ideology that's been very pervasive and around for centuries that views nature as something to be defeated and as an enemy, right? And so that's why I think this effort to merge humanity with machines, right, is sort of born out of that, and I think that's why a lot of these people that are driving this agenda, you know, are transhumanists, because they feel that humanity as a, you know, a human being, as a part of nature, as a natural being, that is wrong, that, you know, humans need to dominate nature, and so the pinnacle of human evolution is not for humans to live in complete harmony with nature or whatever, it's instead for them to merge with machines and things like that, because that's what the transhumanists think, that the pinnacle of evolution is the merging of humans with machines, which is the ultimate removal of humanity from nature, right? So I think, you know, they try to appeal to the inner desire and subconscious desire in people to be more connected with nature, because a lot of social ills, for example, that we experience, or depression that people experience, has to do with the disconnect from nature that exists in our society as it is today. And obviously the fourth industrial revolution would just exacerbate that to a huge degree.
Yeah. I mean, just even a few months ago right now at this moment, climate change has taken a bit of a back burner. Like the whole discussion around that is a selling point for everything, that all their architecture that they want to propel forward. But here and there, when I see it, you know, sort of some articles on it, it'll say, you know, stuff about bike lanes. And, you know, of course everyone wants bike lanes and all that, and all that's great, but that's not what this is about. Right, so it's always repackaging things that are, you know, to, you know, basically seduce people. It's like,
right,
you know, you have a taste of what they would like to see and what everyone would like to see, and it sounds great, right? But you don't talk about stuff.
Well, I think it's sort of what you allude to in your new series about social media. You know, how they framed originally social media as, oh, it's going to keep you more connected and make you more social, but instead it's, as you point out, really destroyed the social, and that destruction was calculated. That was the original plan, but it was marketed originally as something that would make us more social, right? And so a lot of the fourth industrial revolution things are being sold under a similar guise, but obviously if you see where things are really going, it's not going to make things, it's not going to create an environmentally sustainable system. People will not be happier, right? And all of this stuff, and it's the calculated destruction of just, you know, major aspects of what has held together human society for centuries, right? So that seems to be a common theme here in terms of how they market it.